weeks. This Shabbos, with this very special opportunity to be reading the final two parshios in all of Sefer Bamidbar and finishing the fourth book in the Torah, and Bezrat Hashem next week beginning the final stretch of the Torah, beginning Sefer Dvarim. Even though we will be reading the most amount of psukim that we could read in a double parsha this week, Matos and Maaseh, I will be holding on to every single word as I have learned my lesson for missing Kriyas HaTorah for so many weeks in a row, so many months in a row, that every single word, every single letter, every single pasuk in the Torah is so precious, and I look forward to hearing every single word in the Torah. And Bezrat Hashem, I look forward to the time when we can all, everybody, can feel comfortable to come back to Shul in a safe and healthy manner, Bezrat Hashem, very, very soon. We're going to begin tonight, the drasha tonight, with a game. And I'm going to ask for participation from everybody here. I'm going to recite three sentences. And you tell me what connects these three sentences. First one.
Next three sentences.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. That's number one. Number two. I feel like I'm a game show host right now. Call me Ishmael. And number three, happy families are alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. What is the commonality between these three sentences? The best of times, the worst of times, call me Ishmael, and happy families are alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Anyone know? You have your computers. You can Google it.
Charles Dickens, Melville.
Okay, they're books, right?
Yeah.
One is Melville, good.
Dickens.
Yes.
And is it Dostoevsky? No, Chekhov.
Close. Tolstoy. Who was that? Who's talking? Who is that?
Marjorie Branner.
Oh, Margie Banner. Okay. So Margie's correct. She got every single author. But what is similar? Why did I pick out these three? These are three books, Moby Dick, Tale of Two Cities, and Anna Karenina. What is similar about these three sentences is that they are the first sentence in each one of these books. Moby Dick begins famously, call me Ishmael. Tale of Two Cities begins the best of times, the worst of times. And Anna Karenina begins with unhappy families and happy families. When it comes to first sentences in books, they become famous, right? Or infamous for that matter. First sentences in books become etched in the minds of the readers. And I will tell you, I'll be honest with you, I definitely didn't read two out of three of these books. And yet these lines become famous in the culture, in the milieu, in the in common jargon for everybody. But what about last sentences? Last sentences, right? How many last sentences do we really remember from the books or the Sfarim that we learn? And it's really strange because of recency bias, you would argue that we should be able to remember last sentences more than we're able to remember first sentences. But it's not true, right? And I'd like to argue that one of the most famous or most overlooked, not most famous, but one of the most overlooked final sentences appears in our parsha. And you'll say final sentences. Bamidbar is the fourth book in the Torah. There are five rabbi. But many, many mefarshim point out that really with the closing of the curtain on Sefer Bamidbar, we are really essentially closing up the entire Torah. And many, including the Vilna Gaon, put a circle around the first four books of the Torah versus the fifth. Devarim is really an entirely different work. Devarim is written through the eyes of Moshe Rabbeinu. Much of it is written in first person, and God is speaking through the voice of Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, the last book of the Torah in this way is really Bamidbar. But Midbar is the last book of the Torah spoken through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in some ways, it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu handing off the Torah now to Moshe Rabbeinu for the beginning of the fifth book. And how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to end his fourth book of the Torah? How does Bamidbar end? It's very significant. What's the message that Hashem wants to leave us off with at the end of Sefer Bamidbar before he passes on the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu? And if you look at the end of Parshas Maaseh, you will notice a very well-known story in the Torah. It's a story of Benot Slovchad, the daughters of Slovchad. I happen to be a card-carrying member of the Slovchad club. Who was Slovchad? Slovchad was a father of five daughters who died in the Midbar. Avinu Meis Bamidbar, they come to Moshe Rabbeinu. He left five daughters with no sons. And they go to Moshe to complain and tell Moshe, Avinu Meis Bamidbar, who gets our Yerusha? We want the Yerusha in Eretz Yisrael. And it's very, very important. We learn very important halachos regarding inheritance, Yerusha, that daughters can, in fact, inherit from their parents, and other halachot are learned from this portion in the Torah. But I have the following problem. The following problem is, this is not the only time that Benot Slovchad is taught to us in the Torah. In fact, just last week in Parshas Pinchas, we learned about Slovchad and his daughters. We learned the whole story. We learned all the halachos. And then the Torah goes ahead. At the end of Maaseh, at the end of the fourth book of the Torah, or essentially the entire Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu repeats the story of Slovchad and his daughters and the stories and halachos of inheritance. We already know the details. Why would Hashem have a message? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to end the Torah in such a way? So I'd like to share with you a story before we get there. One of the great leaders of the Jewish people before the Holocaust was a man by the name of Rav Chaim Ozer Gazansky. Rav Chaim Ozer was known, he was the Gadol, Chafetz Chaim died in 1933. And after the Chafetz Chaim died, who was the rabbi, the Gadol Hador of the generation in Europe? It was Rav Chaim Ozer. He didn't even go by his last name. He was known as Rav Chaim Ozer. He was the Beis Din in Vilna. Vilna was the most prominent Jewish community in Eastern Europe at the time. And he was the head of the Beis Din there. And questions were coming in from all over the world. They say about Rav Chaim Ozer Gazansky that he was able to write two tshuvos at the same time, one with his right hand and one with his left hand. I don't know if that story is true or not, but they don't tell that story about me. And Rav Chaim Ozer wrote his magnum opus. It was called the Achiezer. The Achiezer is a tshuva sefer, responsa sefer, which discusses the most famous pieces of Torah. He wrote this sefer at the end of his life. Rav Chaim Ozer happened to pass away on the 5th of Av, this upcoming week. The 5th of Av in 1940. He died in the shadow of the Holocaust and the shadow of Tisha B'Av. What was Rav Chaim Ozer's last sentence? What were his last words that he shared? And he writes the following, and I could send it to you, the entire, it's about a few pages long, his introduction to his Sefer Achiezer. It's 1940. The Nazis are raising through all of Europe. They are murdering men, women, and children. They are killing every single Jew in their path. And he knows the end is near. What does Rav Chaim Ozer decide to do at this moment in history? This moment in his personal history and this moment in his Jewish history. He decides to write a sefer. He decides to publish a new work of responsa on the Torah. And he begins his sefer by writing the following: Machshavot togeh mitrotetzos bekerev leiv choshev. I am struggling, right? I have thoughts that are, fighting me. That is this the right appropriate time? Haim shat chibum hazot? Is this the appropriate time to bring another sefer to Or Olam, to the world. Do we need a sefer right now when the Jewish people are literally drowning? Is this appropriate? And he goes on to argue. Cain, of course it is. It is always appropriate. But at this time, the Jewish people, and always in history, it's not only a time to thrive, it is a time to survive. It's also a time to thrive. Even in the shadow of silence, concealment and crisis, we need to find the strength to find time to write our own story, to write our own chapters in history. Rav Chaim Ozer says, there's never time for a Jew to retreat, even in the shadow of destruction. And with this, I think we can answer our question. Why would a Kaddish Baruch Hu, why did Hashem choose to repeat the story of Benot Slovchad again at the end of Sefer Bamidbar? Essentially, Hashem's last sentence to the Jewish people. And I think there are three lessons we learned from Chaim Ozer and by extension to the Benot Slovchad in this story. Number one, we learn that we must always speak up for what we believe in and what we think is right. There is never a wrong time to speak up for what you think is the right thing to do. If there is an atrocity, there's a tragedy, there is something anti-Semitic going on around us, then it is our obligation, our duty, our responsibility as a Jew and a member of this world to get up and to say something is wrong. That is number one from the Benot Slovchad. Secondly, we always read Parshas Maaseh during the 3 weeks. The 3 weeks is a time for us, it's a time of rechuk, it's a time of distance, it's also a time to connect and to yearn for Eretz Israel and to develop, perhaps in a distant way, a greater appreciation and love for the land of Israel. And that's why the Benot Slovchad stepped up. It wasn't that they were going to get a land. It wasn't just an inheritance. It wasn't just a bank account with a very large, amount of zeros. That wasn't what they were going for. That would be nice, but that wasn't what they were going for. And it wasn't an apartment in Dubai, and it wasn't a beautiful home in Johannesburg, but it was land in Eretz Yisrael, Artzeinu HaKadosha. And throughout Jewish history, we could sum up all of our life, all of Jewish history, that our whole life is getting to Eretz Yisrael. The Jewish people are kicked out, we're removed, we're banished, and we're trying to walk back and travel back to Eretz Yisrael. And it's specifically now that I think about this even more than ever. If you think about it, was there ever a time in our lives, maybe I'll speak for myself, that I couldn't just go on a plane and get to Eretz Yisrael? Or if I so choose, to make Aliyah for that matter, Nefesh B'Nefesh has made it so easy to do. Yet, so many people were pining and yearning and wanting and willing, and I have all the paperwork done, and all they need to do is go on a plane. Guess what? We live in a time right now where that's not so possible. And maybe, just maybe, there's a message there from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe, just maybe, Hashem is teaching us a message that we need to want it more. We need to learn. We need to learn from the Benot Slovchad to develop and to continue to develop a greater sense of appreciation and love for Eretz Israel, for the land of Israel. By connecting, by learning, by reading, by advocating, and by davening for the land that we love, our homeland, Eretz Israel, where we really, truly all belong. And the third lesson that I think we learn from having and placing Benot Slovchad at the end, and that Rav Chaim Ozer taught us in the shadow of the Holocaust in 1940, is that we are never victims. We must always be proactive. We are the arbiters of our own history and our own destiny. The Benot Slovchad didn't just simply roll over and say, our father died. Hey, there's no halacha here. Let's just assume we don't get any land in the land of Israel. Let's just assume there's no inheritance for us. They didn't do that. They took history, they took destiny, into their own hands. They were proactive in their own lives. They never said, hey, I'm tied up, I'm bound, I'm just going to, you know, be passive and let people act upon me. They said, it is up to us. We as Jewish people, we have a neshama, we have a chelak Eloka mima'al inside of us, a little piece of God inside of us. And that piece of God teaches us and informs us and challenges us and inspires us that we can create, and we must create, our own destiny, regardless of where we are, what situation we're in. We are where we are supposed to be. And I believe it is for these three important and vital lessons for our lives. Number one, we must speak up for what is right. Number two, to develop a true love for the land of Israel. And three, to be proactive and to never claim that we are victims in our own personal history and for the destiny of the Jewish people. That Benot Slovkhan is a story that teaches us all those three, and is a perfect and fitting last sentence to the entire Torah. And I'll conclude with a story. 2 weeks ago, I think I shared a story with the Baba Cherebi. I shared one about his wife. I'm reading this book called Positivity Bias. It is unbelievable. If you have time right now to read books, you're home, Positivity Bias, buy it on Amazon, you'll get within a few days. It will change your outlook and perspective on life. And Lubavitcher Rebbe's wife, I didn't know this, but apparently every single day, Chaim Mishka, Rebbe's a Chaim Mishka, right? Most Lubavitcher young boys that are born are Menachem Mendel, and the girls are Chaim Mishka. So Rebbe's a Chaim Mishka. Every single day, she was taken by a driver to a park in Queens, and she would sit outside by the park. She couldn't do that in Brooklyn because she was a famous person. Right, she would get bombarded. She'd be asked for brachos, and that really wasn't her style. That was her husband's style. That really wasn't her style, and she wanted space and time alone, just to focus. We know that unfortunately, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rebbetzin never had any children. They were zochet to have any children, so she would go every single day. A driver would take her to a park in Queens. The driver would wait in the car, and she would sit outside. She'd read. She'd walk. And she would, get a few moments to herself. One day, there was a detour. There was a detour. And the regular way that they go, the regular, route that they would take was not available to them. And they had to follow those large orange signs with the arrows on them to try to get around where they need to get to the park. And as this was happening, Rebbetzin Chaim Mishka remembered a teaching from her father. Her father was the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe that took over, her husband, was the son-in-law of the previous one, the Friedeker Rebbe. And he always taught her that a Jew is where Hashem always places the Jew where they're supposed to be. We're never victims. We're always supposed to be proactive. And if Hashem changes the way you're going one day, where Hashem presents you with somebody in front of you, or makes you hear something that you don't, it's there for a purpose. And as every single day, like clockwork, she gets to this park, and today there's a detour, her antennas are up. Hashem is sending me on a detour for a purpose, for a reason. And as they go on this detour, they go around, some of the public blocks, and they notice that it's a regular, Wednesday afternoon, and there is a huge moving truck outside of a house. And the moving truck is, the movers are, bring everything into this big truck. And there is a young woman who is sitting outside the truck, hysterical crying. The Rebbetzin says, this is it. She stops, she goes out, and she starts talking to this woman. What's your name? She says, young Jewish woman. She says, my husband passed away many years ago. I can't pay rent anymore. I owe rent for the past year. I can't pay it. And it's the owner, the Baal HaBayis, will not allow me anymore to stay here. He needs to make money, and he's kicked me out of the apartment, and I have nowhere to go. And I'm just crying. My children are in school. They're going to come home from school today, and there's nowhere for them to go. She turns to her. And she says, don't worry, we are going to take care of you. How much do you need? $6,000 at the time. For them, that wasn't a problem. They took care of it within, it couldn't be moments back then in the 70s. They took care of it and they saved this woman's life. And they continued to pay rent on the house until it wasn't needed anymore. And it only happened because this woman was taught at a young age, like the Benot Slovchad, that we are not victims. And if we are in a certain place, if we are stuck, we are not stuck. We are never victims. We always can create our own destiny in our own lives. And it's my bracha and my blessing to all of us that as Hashem continues to place us in places that we've never expected, or in situations that we don't expect, that we find the inner fortitude and inner strength to find opportunities in those moments of struggle, those moments of challenge, to be stronger, to be more creative, and to create a greater destiny and history for ourselves, just like the Benot Slovchad of old. Wish everybody a good Shabbos. Just trying to stop the spotlight so I could see everybody. And wanted to wish everybody a great Shabbos. And so good to see everybody. And Bezrat Hashem. We're moving closer.
Good Shabbos, Rabbi.
Good Shabbos, Rabbi.
You and the family, everyone.